Welcome and thank you for joining us today for MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where we bring awareness to nonprofit leaders and everyday heroes who are making an impact in our community through their generosity, their purpose, and their impact. Thank you for joining us today for MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community. Our hope is to share information, inspiration, and stories of impact so you can go out and make a difference in our community in your own unique way. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellen Becker Investment Group. We have a local nonprofit that originated in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin in 1907. When a doctor and his wife opened a health resort, which was a pioneering facility focusing on innovative mental health treatments in a natural setting. It now has locations in 10 states, including 9 locations across the state of Wisconsin, and a 10th location opening in the Chippewa Valley soon. Let's find out who this impressive organization is who has treated close to 17,000 patients in Wisconsin as of this year. Welcome to the show today, Dr. Heather Jones from Rogers Behavioral Health and Margaret Lidstone, president of the Rogers Behavioral Health Foundation.
Nice to be here with you. Thanks for having us.
You are certainly welcome. Well, Rogers has been around for well over 100 years and making quite the impact in the area of mental health. They're known for treating complex mental health and substance use issues. So for people who may not realize the scope, what type of programs does Rogers offer?
At Rogers, we have a full continuum of care from inpatient, which is for crisis stabilization and those kind of emergent needs, to residential, which is a 24/7 home-like setting where people can start or continue their recovery with us. We have partial hospitalization programs, which are on an outpatient basis, intensive outpatient programs, which are also on an outpatient basis, 3 hours, 3 to 5 days a week. And most recently, we have added a traditional 1 hour a week outpatient therapy offering, which completes our full continuum of care. So people can access therapy and psychiatric services that way as well. Within this continuum of care, we specialize in treating OCD and anxiety. This ranges from individuals who have debilitating OCD all the way to people who have generalized anxiety disorder, panic, or even health anxiety that are accessing our treatment. We specialize in eating disorders, again, a full continuum of care for both children and adults. We have depression programs and address suicidality and emotion dysregulation in our programs. And we specialize in treating trauma and PTSD. And that includes a recent add to our continuum of care and our specialty programs, where we have a program for veterans and first responders.
And you mentioned eating disorders with kids. Do you really have a lot of that?
We do. We see children as young as 8 in our programs that are struggling with eating disorders.
Oh, that's very sad.
Yeah.
8 years old and having to deal with that. Yeah. Well, you both work with patients and families from different points in their journey. What are some of the challenges that you see most often when people try to access mental health care?
I think one of the biggest barriers in navigating that first step is just understanding how to seek help, who to call, how to make that referral, how to get access to care. And healthcare and behavioral healthcare more specifically can be a challenge to navigate and understand and know who do you have that first conversation with. And secondly, and probably the most obvious, is the stigma associated with asking for help when a mental health challenge is at the forefront of your life.
Yeah.
And so we really do our very best to give people a very non-stigmatizing and compassionate experience because we understand the courage it takes to make that first call.
Yeah. And is it getting any better? I mean, do you find that the stigma is not as much or as great as it has been in the past?
I do think it is getting better. And I think that the generations that are coming through today have the ability to talk about mental health and to talk about the challenges they have in more courageous ways than we've seen in the past. So really want to give them credit for helping us in that regard.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Well, as the foundation, Margaret, you help to remove barriers to care. What kinds of financial or logistical challenge do patients experience, and how does philanthropy step in and address those?
Sure. So after that first call is made that Dr. Jones referred to, so patients have reached out to Rogers already looking for help. But unfortunately for patients and for families, they can face further practical barriers to getting the help that they need. Insurance gaps, travel costs, missed wages, or even basic needs like lodging and meals while they're supporting a loved one, as an example. And so philanthropy steps in where those systems falls short. So donors who support Rogers Foundation are, in essence, supporting those patients to cover treatment scholarships, to provide transportation assistance, or to support in other crisis funding so that families and patients can focus on healing and not finances.
Okay, well, beyond patient care, how does philanthropy help support innovation and community programs and that stigma reduction that Dr. Jones talked about?
Right. So in addition to that patient care I was just speaking about, philanthropic support enables us to look upstream and long-term and invest in innovative research and program developments that enable us to enhance and improve care. And importantly, to invest in community programs so we can reduce the stigma that is probably one of the most significant barriers to care, particularly for those populations that are less likely to seek help.
Mm. Well, do you have any particular examples of how philanthropy has made a tangible difference in a patient's life?
Every day, the foundation is receiving requests to either help people come through the door and begin treatment, or support the cost for a loved one to come visit on a family weekend. But beyond that, philanthropy supports what Rogers and what my colleagues like Dr. Jones are doing with patients by creating additional innovative programs. So, for example, in Oconomowoc, we utilize canine-assisted therapy. We have a campus dog, Kobe.
Yay! Love that.
But
love that.
That wouldn't be possible were it not for the support of a handful of donors who have enabled us to establish canine-assisted therapy and to do it in some really groundbreaking ways, and we hope to extend that to all of our residential facilities. So similarly, we have a ropes course in our residential facility in Oconomowoc that is primarily for our adolescent and young adult population to challenge themselves in physical ways that helps to enhance their care. Our donors support the provision of spiritual care to patients in residential care who request it. It's non-ecumenical spiritual care that really can be just an additional facet to people in their healing journey.
And you have that gala like in May, right?
November.
That's okay. It's the other one that's in
May. We have a women's gathering luncheon every May that raises awareness and particular financial support for our spiritual care program.
Okay, yeah, because we've been involved
yes.
in that. Yeah, great program.
I just want to add that the other aspect of donor-supported philanthropic activity is the community education that we support. So Rogers is able to host parent universities to give parents the tools to support their children who are getting care at Rogers so that after discharge, the home environment can be an environment more conducive to healing. Similarly, we are going into schools to help provide training. I could go on and on, I won't, but the opportunities are endless for donors to engage because the need is frankly endless.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part,
right?
That there's such a need out there, but the blessing is that people like you are making a difference and providing solutions, right?
Right.
Well, I recently interviewed a woman from a nonprofit that provided care for caregivers, which unfortunately isn't always something people think about. We have great resources for people who need care, which we definitely should, of course. But the people who provide the care also need some help sometimes. I read a stat recently that said up to 67% of first responders report mental health challenges like anxiety and depression. And many people assume that they're trained to handle that and anything else. Why do so many who answer the call of duty to help others often hesitate to make the call for help themselves? And what could change if they had a tailored, stigma-free care path? Well, let's learn about that after our short commercial break. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to MPC, brought to you by Allenbecker Investment Group. At EIG, we are committed to education. That's why we host seminars throughout the year covering topics like Medicare, estate planning, real estate investing, caregiving, personal finance, and more. And the best part? They're open to everyone. Curious about what's coming up? Visit allenbecker.com/events and join us. We'd love to see you there.
Welcome back to MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where I'm continuing my conversation today with Dr. Heather Jones from Rogers Behavioral Health and Margaret Lidstone, president of the Rogers Foundation. So before the break, I mentioned that up to 67% of first responders report mental health challenges like anxiety and depression. And many people assume that they're trained to handle that and anything else that comes their way, right? Tell us why this assumption makes it harder for them to ask for help.
Well, I'm going to start and have us think for a second about the totality of our first responders' jobs. Their identity, they're a role in our communities. They are perceived as, and we all hope that they are impervious to danger, threat, and will be highly capable in extreme circumstances. And so that in and of itself is so counterintuitive to how our bodies work, how our brains work, how we're developed, and how, you know, our bodies are designed and our brains are designed to avoid threat and to avoid the risk of injury or harm to ourselves. And so I think that that helps us understand both exactly why asking for help is difficult, because these positions are perceived to be impervious to needing it because they're there to help, as well as completely understand and help paint the picture for why they need our help and why they need to make sure that they're not only physiologically healthy, but also have a focus on their mental well-being as in addition.
So are all those reasons and then some what inspired the creation of this Firewatch program?
The inspiration and creation of this program is a direct impact of the passion and lived experience of clinicians at Rogers. The program was originally launched in 2024 with a grant from the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs and was established to be a program for veterans in order to address unmet need in the community. We quickly realized that the opportunities extended well past just veterans in our communities and learned that a significant portion of our first responders are veterans, so anywhere from 10 to 25%. So this enabled us to open the door to serve a wider breadth of the community and gave us the opportunity to show up for the people that are showing up for us.
Okay. I'm curious if there are particular stressors or trauma patterns that you see in first responders that are maybe different from the general population.
There are. So we know that there is repeated exposure to acute trauma, death, crisis. Moral injury is something that we focus on in our program. And so moral injury is the idea that you are acting in a way that is outside of or incongruent with your value system. And so people placed in positions where they need to act and don't have a good choice, but have to act, often experience moral injury. So combat veterans and first responders. And I think the lack of decompression time for this population, so we know that shifts are long and frequent, and so the downtime and the processing time of these experiences that they're having are not happening at a high enough rate.
Mm. Well, tell us how it works then. Like, what services or support does the program provide then to firefighters, paramedics, police officers, and dispatchers?
So the program is twofold. So it is designed as a virtual intensive outpatient program, meaning that it is 3 to 5 days a week for 3-hour segments. And we also have a traditional outpatient option by a master's level clinician who is a certified first responder counselor. So we have options for first responders to call and just do an assessment if they're just not sure. We have also established relationships with police captains, fire chiefs in the community, and they are often calling and asking for help on how to, you know, make that first call. And so I've been grateful for those partnerships and for the courage of those leaders to show up in their departments and make it okay for their first responders to ask for that help, and have personally, you know, walked them through the process.
And that helps in that stigma reduction.
It absolutely
helps. So, I mean, you've got your captain saying, hey, you know, it's, we all go through this potentially, and
that's
it's
right.
No big deal. Not that it's no big deal, but I mean, the fact that you're struggling with it is fine. Go get some help that you need.
That's right. And yeah. We've established the program with individuals with lived experience. So our therapists are either combat veterans themselves or have experiences in these spaces. So that stigma reduction and that the true understanding of where people are coming from is there.
Okay. Well, let's shift to the philanthropic side of this. What role does it play in making Firewatch possible, and what would it take to expand this program to reach more departments across Wisconsin?
So first and foremost, and you might not expect the president of a foundation to say this, but first and foremost is not a resource request. We need our community to help us reduce the stigma that creates such a barrier for first responders mm-hmm. to seek the help that they need but also deserve. And so stigma reduction and raising awareness, that is a community activity. That's a community, in a way, obligation that we owe to these people who help us. So the first thing I would say is I just want anyone hearing this to help be a voice for how important it is for first responders and veterans to access the help that is available to them. So that's number one. And if someone stops there, I will be delighted.
Okay.
Beyond that, in order to expand this program, we really invite philanthropists to reach out to the Rogers Foundation, because there's really two very tangible opportunities. Number one, much like what I was talking about in the first segment, first responders are patients, and those patients have potentially financial barriers to seeking help, and we want to be there to assist them as we do any patient that crosses over Rogers' threshold. So that's number one. But number two, like any community challenge, we invite philanthropists to work with us to help us develop innovative solutions. There may very well be things that we haven't thought about yet, about how do we expand the access to technology for a first responder in a rural area who wants to have to engage in these virtual sessions that Dr. Jones was talking about. We are open to developing solutions, much like the ones that led to our canine assisted therapy programs, that led to a spiritual care program. I don't want to dictate to the community what the solution is. I invite the community into the foundation to begin a conversation about what more can we do to help elevate the Firewatch program, because it's so critical for all of us that we see it succeed.
Well, let's learn about that after our short commercial break. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Milwaukee's philanthropic community is brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. This year, EIG celebrates 30 years of thoughtful growth, personalized service, and community impact. From a kitchen table vision to a boutique wealth management firm, EIG has always put people first, offering transparent advice, fiduciary care, and education that empowers families for generations. To learn more, visit ellenbecker.com.
Welcome back to MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community. Well, for listeners who want to help, whether they're first responders, family members, employers, community supporters, any of those and beyond, how can they get involved or access resources?
So I'm going to turn over to Dr. Jones about accessing resources.
Yeah. So first and foremost, calling Rogers, calling us. We have new and innovative ways for people to get access to service, one of which is we have an ability to use a chat bot on our website. But what that does is, yes, it's technology and it isn't a human, but it also enables someone to, from the privacy of their home, ask questions and start a screening if they are considering getting help.
Oh, okay.
We also have, we are working with other community organizations in order to make sure that we have an easy access point for first responders and their leaders in the community to make sure that they kind of don't get lost in the shuffle, or they can access our program easily. So all of that information can be found on our website, rogersbh.org. And as Margaret was saying earlier, I certainly can be a point of contact for leaders in the community if this is something that they're interested in. We have clinical directors of this program, myself, who come out into the community and do talks and provide education on what this program looks like, focuses on, what the challenges are. And I've had really great experiences, particularly in the fire service and talking with firefighters. They will be readily willing to admit that, you know, they don't feel fear, even though we all know sitting in this room, right? We all feel fear. We all feel anxiety. And being able to help someone navigate through that in order for them to be skillful and effective is really what drives the people in this program and drives us to continue to reach out.
If anyone is inclined to support us financially, you can go to the same website that Dr. Jones mentioned, and it's easy to donate right there from the home screen. You can also find the contact information for the foundation and reach out to us if you are interested in participating in a training or hosting a fundraiser of your own to advance the Firewatch program.
Okay. Well, I say all the time that there's never enough time to get to everything we want to get to, but the idea is that we're planting that mustard seed. So if someone's listening, perhaps they weren't aware of the Firewatch program, now they are. They're at least aware of some general pieces of it. Maybe people wanted to help in some way. Now they know where to go and what they can do and some people they can reach out to. So thank you for being here today, Dr. Heather Jones from the Rogers Behavioral Health, and Margaret Lidstone, president of the Rogers Behavioral Health Foundation. I appreciate you sharing how you provide support in so many different ways to people who are struggling with mental health. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening to our show today, MPC, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, where you learn about nonprofit leaders and everyday heroes who are making an impact in our community through their purpose, their passion, and their generosity. To hear more inspiring stories and perhaps find a place to plug in and share your time, talent, and resources, just tap the subscribe button or go to ellenbecker.com/podcasts. Whether you're in your home, at work, or out in the community, find a way to be a blessing and give a blessing. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If something in today's conversation resonated with you, share it with a friend or family member. And if you hadn't already, subscribe so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe education and community impact go hand in hand. That's why we love bringing you thoughtful insights from leaders and organizations who care deeply about making a difference in Milwaukee and beyond. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes and to highlight philanthropic efforts in our community. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellen Becker Investment Group employees and leaders. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll see you next time.